next in the series is mentoring and creating great leaders. If you are on a board or a CEO and have to recruit and hire Adventist leaders, you understand what a challenge that can be at times. And so it is incumbent upon all of us to continue to grow leaders. We have asked Dr. Niels Andreasen to present that topic for us today. How do we mentor and grow more leaders for the future? Dr. Andreasen?
Thank you. It's good to be here a bit late in the afternoon, but we'll see what we can make of it. I had used to give talks about leadership voluntarily in past years, but I've given that up. I've discovered that I don't know too much about it, and now I only give talks when compelled to do so, and this was the situation here today. So I will share some things that I've learned. I won't be quoting from clever books, just sharing what I have learned and observed with a few illustrations, and I will try to look at four issues that leaders are facing and that therefore mentoring is all about. First, the leaders need to be able to see into the future. Second, the leader needs to learn some things in addition to those innate gifts that leaders have. Third, the mission vision thing is really important and mentoring can help. And finally, I will look at just a couple of examples of what mentoring future leaders might mean. And I will conclude it all by telling you about the person who gave us the name Mentor. This was a real person who was named Mentor, and we took his name and used it to describe what leaders do to future leaders. Thought you might be interested in that in case you don't know. If you know, it'll just be a quick repeat. So let's begin. Leadership is a complex matter, and the traits of successful leaders are hard to define with precision. We have heard that already. I find that to be true. Personal qualities, even the least promising, may play an important role in the formation of a leader, and external circumstances may conspire to either make or break a leader. We have learned that already. This presentation proceeds from the premise that leaders generally possess certain personal inborn qualities, but that leadership skills can be acquired and honed with time and attention. Consequently, experienced leaders can serve as mentors for emerging leaders. First topic. Here's what leaders have to do, and this is why mentoring is important. Leaders anticipate the future by their ability to see what is just over the horizon or just around the corner, but they are not prophets. Okay? It's a little different from that. People at Andrews or outside Andrews often ask me on that point, what are you doing and what is the most difficult assignment you have right now at Andrews? And I tell me my assignment at Andrews is not right now. It is 2, 3, 5, and 7 years from now. You have heard that college presidents and university presidents raise money because students don't pay enough to fund us. That's true. And people ask me, how do you raise money right now in this international economic crisis? Have you given up? And my response is, no, we still raise a bunch of money. But it's for 3, 5, 10, and 15 years out in what we call planned gifts. It's going very well, but it will come to Andrews when I'm pushing daisies, I'm sure. Leaders are always thinking about 3, 5, 7 years out. Key concept, the ability to anticipate the future distinguishes leaders from managers, and we are talking about leaders. Managers and leaders, just a couple of comments. Managers are assigned to do the right thing in the right way, at the right time, and with the right outcome, and generally following a tried course of action. Now, leaders, what we are talking about, may be ineffective managers, but they perceive what is coming next, and they plot a new direction to deal with it. And that's where mentoring is so important. Now, to lighten up, I'm going to show you a couple of pictures of two individuals from the past. They say one was a manager and the other became a leader. Who was the leader? What was the difference between them? Actually, if you check out on them, if you've got your history, some of you remember, they were both very smart people, both living in England, both of them following very comparable paths of their life. Not too interested in education, but they learned enough to be members of the British Parliament and moved into positions of ministers of various parts of the British government. And then the Second World War began to show itself on the horizon, and Arthur Neville Chamberlain was the Prime Minister, and he tried very, very hard to manage the situation. You remember? He talked with the French, he talked with Herr Hitler, the Germans, and he tried to develop a kind of a compromise that will keep war from breaking out. He was willing to let the Anschluss in Austria take place. He was willing to concede the Sudetenland in the Czech Republic to keep the peace. And he got a promise that he brought back to London after a meeting in Munich, and the famous picture, he showed it coming out of the airplane, "I have peace for our time." And we have ridiculed him for that, but he was a good and honest manager. He really wanted to manage the peace in Europe. You see, he had remembered the First World War in the trenches in northern France, where untold soldiers were killed with poison gas and bullets and bombs, and no land changed hands. It was a useless war. It just created corpses. He knew that, and he wanted to avoid it. But he didn't quite see what was around the corner. Winston Churchill was a private citizen brought into government, and he had his spies who visited German munitions factory. And he said to himself, "Why are they building so many Spitfires, that's fighter jets, and so many U-boats? What's the meaning of that?" And he drew the conclusion, probably war was coming. Let's get ready. I don't want to say one was a bad person, the other one was a good person. They each had their assignment. One tried to manage a difficult situation, the other became the leader. For a few years of war, and after the war, the British people voted him out of office because they wanted a manager again, and his name was Mr. Bevan. That is just to illustrate what a leader needs to be able to do, and mentoring. Mentoring can help the leader always to look around the corner, always to look forward. Sometimes you miss it, sometimes you make it. It's not something one is born with, and it doesn't come from inspiration. Mentoring, which says to the leader of the future, keep looking forward. Imagine what will happen. Look around the corner. Prepare for what may be coming. That was my first point. Let's see what else we have. Oh, a few case studies. Yes, I'm not going to take time on these. We don't have that much. But here's a case that came to me. How would a leader respond? How would a manager respond? 75% of the 2.2 million church members in Southern Africa are under 35 years of age, I was told by the church leaders there. What does that mean? I'm an educator. That means they're school age. What do we do about that? If we are managers, what? Build more schools, maybe? Or call up Andrews University, can you help? We have lots of students and few schools. That's what happened. And I said, let's think about that as leaders. How would a leader address that question? That's a thought question. In the past 5 years, the Adventist primary and secondary schools in North America, where I live, lost 20% of their enrollment. That's not so good. If that continues in another 5 years, what will happen? What would a manager do? It was a manager who pointed this out to me, and he said, what are we going to do? I said, what do you have got in mind? And he said, well, we should recruit harder. And I said to him, well, let's try to look at that from a leadership point of view. Why do you think that enrollment dropped? Is it too expensive? Or something else? Have people moved away from where the schools are? What is the nature of the problem, and what can we do as leaders to address it? Thought question. Here's another one. Did you see that recently 3 times as many converts joined the Adventist Church in the United States through friendship as through public evangelism efforts? It's a challenge. What would a manager do? We have a lot of evangelism managers on the Andrews University campus, and they will say, have more campaigns to get that percentage up. A leader might say, well, what about friendship evangelism? We never tried that exactly. What would that look like? Who are the friends, and how would they express their friendship? Is that something we do on college campuses? Everyone become friends now and bring your friend to church. That seems to be 3 times as effective as public evangelism. Management will look at it one way, leadership will look at it in a different way. Point number 2 about leaders and why we need to mentor leaders. Leaders are born rather than made, probably. But leadership skills can be acquired. Key concept. Born leaders can be enormously successful and exciting. They can speak and whip up enthusiasm. But if they do not acquire leadership skills along the way, their success can be very short-lived and become disappointing. Flash-in-the-pan leadership, we can call it. So mentors need to help these board leaders acquire some skills so they don't burn out like one of these stars, you know, comets. They just come and burn out and they're gone. Mentoring helps. Inborn versus acquired leadership skills. A few comments. Born leaders generally possess extraordinary persuasive communication skills. They create large numbers of followers. They cause excitement for their program. They raise expectations to new heights. They move people and ignite causes. You can think of people like that. They are very valuable, and they are valuable for our church. But they usually need to learn a thing or two. They need mentors. Acquired leadership skills, which is what they need to learn, include the ability to listen. Born leaders often come without ears. Lasting leaders have 2, and a willingness to learn new things. That first enthusiastic flash doesn't usually last long. It's to keep learning new things. Skill to build community, find resources for these fancy ideas, create broad and lasting participation and a strategy for success. Let's look at 2 people. They're both alive, and you know them from newspaper pictures and stories. Leaders in the southern part of Africa. What inborn and acquired skills did they bring to their leadership assignment? Mr. Mandela grew up in Johannesburg, influenced by the ANC, that's the organization that eventually changed politics and economics in southern Africa. He became a lawyer, was exiled to the island, Robben Island, where he was jailed, and he spent 20-some-odd years there and acquired a lot of skills, some even from his jailers. He reports that in his book, which you ought to read if you have interest in these matters, Long March to Freedom. And then he became into office, the president at a new country and decided that to heal the nation, some truths need to be told, because only those truths would lead to reconciliation. And that probably will be his lasting contribution to leadership and to politics and to development in our world. Nelson Mandela, he became a Nobel recipient because of that. Truth needs to be found, and that leads to reconciliation, and the country moved forward. A tremendous leadership gift, supplemented with skills acquired in part on Robben Island. The other gentleman, Mr. Mbeki, is also very gifted and became the successor to Nelson Mandela. He also grew up influenced by ANC, the movement in Southern Africa to create independence. His father was a leader. He was born and inspired by these ideas. He became an economist rather than a lawyer, with a degree from the London School of Economics, was exiled, as was the Mr. Mandela, to Great Britain, and later to a neighboring country in South Africa, and joined the New African Movement. And then he ran into some kind of a difficulty. There were some things he didn't quite get to learn, it seems. And that had to do with how to deal with some of the problems that were inflicting his nation, especially HIV/AIDS. He just had a hard time facing the truth about that and got derailed. And I'm afraid, for all the good things he did, his inability to face the truth of this matter that afflicted his country will be a bit of a mark on his kind of leadership. He would not learn that. He should have. He should have acquired some skills, some understanding of how this illness works and how it is transmitted and how it can be, if not cured, at least controlled. So, acquired skills and leadership gifts will help solve leadership problems. And here are a couple of cases. We won't take time on those, just review them. UNICEF reports a total adult literacy rate of 61% for India, 2000 to 2004. Males have a 73% adult literacy rate, and females a 48% adult literacy rate. That's the problem. Now, supposing we are a leader, relying upon some innate skills and some acquired competencies, how would we approach such a problem? It would be nice to have a leader with some gifts to motivate, and really inspire the people of India to learn to read. But what kind of tactical skills would an effective leader need to bring to that task, other than giving speeches and motivating everyone? What about the women who are so far behind? What resources would he bring from women in the community of India? What about the skills of teaching adult people to read? It's not the same as teaching children. A person would need to learn that. Lots of skills would have to be learned for a leader to be effective to do this job, in addition to the inspiration of wanting to change the literacy rate in India. Here's another one. The World Health, we just met these people, I didn't know we were going to meet them, and I looked that up, estimates that 14,000 children under 15 in Botswana are infected with HIV/AIDS, low estimate is 6,100, and the high is 32,000. What kind of persuasive leadership gifts would be needed to address that, and what kind of skills, tactical skills, abilities would be needed? Some years ago, I met a pastor from the Reformed Confession, the Reformed Church, who worked in Botswana. I met him actually in Geneva, I think it was, at some meeting, and he told me about this, and I said to him, what can be done to help? Can we start a massive educational program? How about schools? How about churches? I know something about schools, and he knew about churches. And I said, can we together just spread education throughout that country? And then he said to me, well, no, that will probably not do the trick, because many people in that country do not have promise of a long life. There are economic problems. There are other kinds of health problems. There are huge problems that shorten people's life. And therefore, just to inform them of a longer life by not catching AIDS will not be so valuable if life is short anyway. We need some skills that will change the longevity of all the people in that country, and certainly life will be precious. And then the enthusiasm of teaching how to cope with this illness will be effective. Here's another one from my own little country of Denmark. I don't know if you know that. I'm Danish, and English is my second language, and Danish is to the north of here, about 2 hours by plane. Adventist church membership in Denmark drops annually by the equivalent of one small congregation. What kind of leadership is required to address that? A lot of gifts, of persuasion, I'm sure, but what else? What things do we need to learn about congregational life in that country, and what makes it work, and what makes it happen, and where new congregants come from, and how we bolt them into a new kind of redefined congregational community? Really complicated. Gifts and acquired skills need to be brought together, and mentoring plays a role. Well, let's move on quickly. Number three, leaders move their organization from mission to vision using imagination for the most part. Key concept, good leadership is always mission-driven and always visionary. By mission, we mean that which an organization does. By vision, we mean finding ways to do it better. A word about that. The leader understands the core purpose of the organization he or she leads. That's the mission. At times, the leader must redefine that mission in light of changing circumstances, and mentoring plays an important role. How do we learn to redefine the mission? I'll have a couple of examples in a minute. The vision is developed by empowering the entire organization to imagine better ways to achieve that mission. It gives excitement to the organization along with shared purpose. Look at these two, mission and vision. Let me go on to save time. Here are two organizations. They're in the news right now. Mission and vision coming together. Let's talk about mission drift. How does visionary leadership bring about the recovery? Just a word about these two organizations, then I'll try to wrap it. Steve Jobs, by the way, just got a new liver thanks to advanced healthcare. He had a serious liver illness, and he got a liver transplant, which means that he may return to his Apple company. What about this man? He was young, idealistic, never finished college, had a colleague, Steve Wozniak, and together they created a new computer, Apple or Macintosh, Lisa, Next. You remember those? I was working at Loma Linda when they came out. It was my first computer, was an Apple. You could drag it around just in one hand and the keyboard under your arm, and you had it everywhere. And you could interface graphic and words by just clicking and dragging. It was a wonderful computer, and university people favored that. It was just the computer we wanted to use at Loma Linda, at least all of us in the humanities. So convenient. And then Mr. Jobs got into a conflict with his company and left, and the Apple computers continued to be used by the nerds in universities. And when I went from Loma Linda to Walla Walla, I was told, no more Apple. We won't put up with them here. It's PCs. And I forgot about Apple, and many people did. It became a kind of a quaint computer for people until Steve came back and he said to himself, that was not the mission I had in mind, to make computers for a few elite people sitting in universities. I had in mind computers for everyone, machines they could drag around with them. And so he invented, with this vision, new products. The notebook, almost paper thin. iPods, you have those? Yeah, the whole music library. iTunes, iPhone. I have an iPhone. It will tell me what the weather is in Michigan right now. Amazing. By taking a mission that had gotten stuck and then enlivening it with a new vision, a fresh vision. That's one example of what mentoring can do. Now, General Motors is also in the news. It went bankrupt. General Motors used to make very good cars. I have owned a number of those. In Europe, they call them Opels over here. My father was a great Opel driver. I learned to drive in one of those cars. Car for everyone. Good quality, reliable, affordable, a people's car, good engineering, and economic. And then the company became enamored with different kind of cars that were very fuel inefficient and very expensive and very impractical, and finally no one could afford to buy them, and the company went bankrupt. So how is that going to be fixed? What kind of mentoring is the new CEO of GM going to need? Let's go to a couple of case studies. GM, just a drift of mission drove the company into the ground. And I do not know if there is vision to bring it back to life. We will see. It's an open question. A lot of mentoring will be required. Apple computers seem to rediscover itself. Discover that it's not just a manufacturer for the academics, for the eggheads in the world, but for everyone. And they are clean, white, neat, slim products to go around. Here's Andrews University, where I work. We have 3,400 students on campus and about 4,000 everywhere else in the world. 7,500 students. But we lost 300 students between 1999 and 2003 for a whole host of reasons that I can explain to you but won't. And then we grew by 400 students between 2004 and 2009. What caused that? What leadership, what mentoring helped that happen? Were we guilty of mission drift? In part. Were there external circumstances that almost drove us to distraction? In part. The new things that we brought in that changed this around really came through a process of mentoring. Mentoring by people outside of our organization. They said two things to us. It's too expensive. You must make it more affordable. And here's a way. Secondly, your brand is not clearly recognized. Make it clear. You see something on the screen up here at the corner? Seek knowledge, affirm faith, change the world. That's the new Andrews brand. It was instituted about 4 or 5 years ago in response to this, and now you see it everywhere, thanks to mentoring. It really works. Finally, last point. Leaders mentor junior colleagues by inspiring and empowering them. Empowering them, yeah. I speak English with an accent, sorry, but you'll figure it out. Key concept. Leaders understand their own limits. We are mortal. And so we surround ourselves with associates who demonstrate potential leadership talents. In fact, I try this practice when I have an opportunity to hire new associates, to hire people who are smart enough to take my place at any time. Mentoring means to provide the organization with fresh talents, individuals who understand the organization's core values, that's the mission, and then to equip them and empower them to imagine the organization's future, which is the vision. First, Collins, the right person on the bus and on the right seat of that bus, is the first step in mentoring. Then they take off. Mentoring means handing over the reins of leadership without regret. I'm saying that to you fellow leaders. It's tempting to carry a little bit of regret, because when these new people come in and you mentor them and get them on the bus, on the right seat, you know you're one of these days going to go out the back door. Just get used to it. It's going to be all right out there. There'll be something else to do. So that's one thing we have to think about in mentoring. Good mentoring means preparing people to take your place. Half-hearted mentoring means to make them failures. There's no in-between. Turning the organization over to new leaders through mentoring means taking calculated risks, but potentially reaping great gains. Here are a couple of pictures. I became acquainted with the DeVos family some years ago. One member of that family was running for public office, and so I got involved with that a little bit through the needs of education in the state of Michigan. But then I became acquainted with the whole family, the senior Mr. and Mrs. DeVos, American business people, manufacturers. They have some international, I think, Dutch connections with a name like that. And after they made a lot of money in what is the company is Amway, actually, some of you know about that, they established a foundation, a very big foundation, named after themselves, Richard and Helen DeVos Foundation. And that was impressive, in part because you see the whole family here, two generations, and their spouses. And I became acquainted with that foundation and the leadership it provided, because one of the operations, one of the programs this foundation funded was to train leaders to help young people in inner cities. Like young people's ministers, but not just church leaders, but leaders who are trying to help young people find themselves when they were lost in the big cities. And this foundation decided to fund that. And we got a little bit connected with Andrews because they became interested in how we might at Andrews empower these leaders in training and even help certify them through our academic mechanisms. So that's how the foundation began, and that was DeVos Senior. Then they inspired their children who inherited this money, not to put it into their pockets, but to establish the Dick and Betsy Foundation, and Daniel and Pamela Foundation, and Douglas and Marie Foundation. That's the next generation mentored by the parent generation to follow in their footsteps and use the money to achieve similar goals, to engender values in generations of young people lost in our cities. And I take that as an example of a family where the senior people, before exiting the scene, mentored the junior people, the next generation, to follow in their same footsteps by establishing foundations of their own and not pocketing their money. I thought it was a wonderful example that we could learn from, and you can put your picture on the other side. Let's look at a few case studies. In conclusion, how does a successor, the next generation, move on without losing the way? I mean, how do you keep sight of the core mission as you move from the senior generation to the new generation that is mentored by the senior generation? How do you keep an eye on the mission? And I asked myself, is there a bad example I can give you? And I just thought of one which has been mentioned here at our meetings, and that's the tobacco companies. I'm impressed by their vision. I mean, they can't sell cigarettes in Europe and the US, so they sell them in Russia and China. unbelievable vision. I believe they'll sell cigarettes en masse when we get up there eventually. They just have vision to burn. But what about the mission? Cigarettes kill people. They're bad for you. There's no mission in it. And yet they have all these fields where they grow tobacco. They could grow food in these fields. They should change the mission to something else and apply their vision to a new mission, and those companies would fly around the world and be a great blessing. I wish they would. They need some mentoring in finding the mission at doing something for people. How does a successor keep from following the mentor into the past? That's a temptation, and we must be careful when we mentor our successors that they don't imitate us so much that they follow us into the past. Plenty of mission, but no vision. They're going backwards. And I thought to myself, could I find an example of people who have done that? A kind of a negative example, and I came up with a bad one, and I don't really like it because it may hurt somebody. So I'll apologize for using it, and then I'll use it with the very best of intentions. And that's the Seventh-day Adventist Church's Sabbath School Department. And now let me explain why I use it as an example, because I think we could do something to mentor there. We have a mission. Everyone should study the Bible, right? Every church member should study the Bible. That's the mission. And we've been mentoring each other for years and years. But whenever we talk about it, we find that our Sabbath school attendance of adults is going down pretty rapidly. And people come to the main service. And, oh, we have a hard time getting people involved in Sabbath school studies. There's a lot of mission. We know what to do, but the vision is hard. So one time I met the Sabbath school department in the general conference. And we talked about that. And I said to them, have you wondered why people don't want to study the Sabbath school lesson anymore? Are people not interested in studying? Is that the problem? And the Sabbath school secretary, some of them, said to me, no, actually, people like to study. Adult learning is booming. Phoenix University, online learning. Everyone is studying to improve your abilities and move forward in life. So it's not that people don't want to study, they just don't want to study the Sabbath school lesson. Well, could we create some vision that would make it attractive to study the Sabbath school lesson so people want to do that too? He said, how would you do that? I said, I don't really know, but let's ask what people who like to study expect to get out of it. I said, well, maybe they like to have credits or certification. Could we offer that? If you study our class, you advance your life. You get through high school, you get through college, you take your Bible classes that way. Oh, he said, that can't be done. You're not supposed to do that in Sabbath school. I said, well, who said? Why not? He said, well, would anybody underwrite that and really make it real study that young people could do and they could accomplish their educational goals while studying the Sabbath school class? He said, would Andrews University underwrite that? I said, probably, but it will take a while to get it approved. I have a better way. Let's go to Greek University just down the hall. I bet they'll do it. He said, would you ask for me? So I went down and I talked to the director of Greeks and I said, here's my idea. Would you underwrite that if it turns out that people would like to study their Sabbath school class if they get credit for it and charge them a little bit for the recording fee? He said, anytime. Well, I don't know if that will work or not, but let's make sure that when we mentor people, our successors do not follow their mentors into the past, but into the future. Think of this future. What are the lasting values transmitted from the mentor to the successor, really, when all the chips are down? I think it comes in one word: character. And now finally, who was mentor who gave us this term of mentoring? You perhaps know that, but if you don't, let me tell you. It was a gentleman who lived about 1200 years before Christ in the country which is your home country, Greece. or possibly where Greek people lived in Asia Minor. And the story of Mentor was told 400 years after he lived by a Greek poet named Homer, who wrote two big poems, the Iliad about that war in Troy that's been made into a movie, and the Odyssey about the hero Odysseus, who traveled all the way back home to his family. He fought the war for 10 years, and he traveled for 10 years, and 20 years later, he came back home. But you know, before he left for this 20-year expedition, he had a wife, of course, whose name was Penelope, and they had a son whose name was Telemachus, just a little boy. And he said to one of his good friends, "I'm leaving, it may be 20 years, please look after my boy," and mentor him. And guess what? His servant, to whom he gave this assignment, was named Mentor. And so he looked after the young boy, and 20 years later, Odysseus came back home. And he was an old man, and no one recognized him, except his maid, who washed his feet because there was a birthmark on his foot. And his old dog remembered the smell. So he was recognized, he came back home, and he met his son, who had been mentored for 20 years. And he discovered that his son, under the supervision of Mr. Mentor himself, had become a mature man, and together they established and re-established their family. He got married to his wife Penelope in a very wonderful way, and they had a grown son together who really had been mentored. I don't know if you knew that or not, but now you do. You know why we call it mentoring, and thank you very much.
In response, we've asked again Dr. Clark from Sydney Adventist Hospital to respond, and I think he has a few graphics, so we'll put those up. Dr. Clark?
Well, I had the opportunity to see the overheads beforehand, so I thought I'd present some as well, but don't fear, I'm not going to be here very long, because what I want to do is to try and encapsulate some of the points that Dr. Andreessen made. I have to say that the PowerPoints did nothing to prepare me for what he actually did, and I think we've seen here a great leader, somebody who actually can inspire people, and from him I've gained some inspiration today, as I hope you have too, and I want to thank the organisers for actually asking me to summarise this, because the best way to learn is to teach, and I need a little more than most other people in order to do that. But I just wanted to bring something from somebody who I regard as perhaps the greatest mentor for leaders that I have ever met, a guy called Dan Wurttemberg, and I don't know whether any of you have ever heard him talk, but he simplifies the concept of leadership into three categories. The first one is the leader must be a chief strategist. He must be chief strategist for the organisation. And Dr. Andreessen talked about having a clear vision, being able to see what is over the horizon and around the corner, but of course exhorted us not to be prophets. But it is important for a CEO to be able to see what's coming and to have a clear vision and to be able to communicate that clear vision. He talked a little about managers and leaders and gave us a definition of that. I have a very simple definition that I teach that I talk to my own leaders about. And that is, if it moves, lead it. If it doesn't, manage it. What is your role? And of course, they're all responsible people who move. The next one is chief team builder, and Dr. Andreessen spent quite a bit of time in that space. It's important for leaders to develop and mentor new leaders and to acquire skills, particularly communication skills. And the other thing is to keep learning. We need to have the right person in the right seat on the bus, and of course the bus needs to have a driver, and that driver needs to know where he's going. And we need to recognise talent. We need to recognise talent. We need to recognise those people in our organisation who want to be developed, who have the skills to become leaders, and to use that talent when we move on. The third one that he talks about is being the chief sales officer for the organisation. And this is one that we sometimes, I think, forget about. That we are indeed the representatives of the organisation. Now, he talks about CEOs, but CEOs means leaders. Every leader, in a sense, is a CEO. That we actually represent the organisation that we lead. Dan Wurttemberg says that every leader, every CEO, needs to be outside of that organisation for around a third of their time. And there's a challenge, because that's where most of us become so busy within the organisation that we serve, and we talk about serving the organisation, sometimes rather than leading it. But if we're really seriously leading the organisation, we need to be outside of the organisation for about a third of our time. And in doing that, we need to be developing relationships outside of the organisation. And I note that Dr. Andreessen developed relationships, and he gave an example there of the DeVos family. And I'm sure that the organisation, Andrews University, has benefited significantly from the fact that he got him outside of the organisation and developed that relationship, and I'm sure there were many others. There are many others. And through that, the organisation has developed and grown. We need to take our mission, and in that sense, it's all about focus. And I'll just give you an example of our mission. We had a mission, vision, values statement. It could have been in the front foyer of any organisation, almost, when you looked at it. And it was a good statement, because I was part of the organisation, we actually developed it. So I'm not criticising that statement. But when I became CEO, it became very clear that nobody could remember it, and neither could I. So we developed a new vision, a new mission statement, which is Christianity in Action, and then a short explanation of that, which I can remember, and therefore I have the right to expect that members of my organisation can remember that too. And our vision statement is that we will remain our community's favourite private hospital. That is a serious vision statement. It may not look it, but it's a very serious vision statement in our current very competitive environment. We know we are our community's favourite private hospital because we ask them every couple of years. But to remain in that position is a very significant challenge. So just to summarise, we have a serious responsibility as leaders to train and develop new leaders. And I don't know how many people here have read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Many? How many people have read The 8th Habit? It's even better. And I would urge you to read it, because it talks about inspirational leadership and how to develop that. So if you enjoyed The 7 Habits, you will enjoy that even more. In conclusion, I'd like to thank Dr. Andreessen. I learned a lot from that. I hope you did too. And in fact, I now know who Mentor is. Thank you.